evening, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. I'm Lou Caverly. Welcome to the program. And this is a program that looks into some of the things you may not hear in the mainstream news, or if you do, we may give you a little different slant on it. Many of you remember my wife, Elizabeth, who sadly passed away just over a year ago, and I'm trying to continue in the tradition she established. As many of you know, when we first began quite a number of years ago, in fact, I was still working full-time. So she pretty much planned the show and decided what to put into it. It was really her baby. But now, sad to say, I'm all by myself in presenting it and in figuring out what to put in. So if you'd like to write to me, I'd love to hear from you. You can write to me at Lou, Caverly, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip code is 21609. Well, what do we have today to talk about? And I'll give that address again later if you didn't get that. If you just didn't have a pencil, a pen, and paper handy, I'll make sure I give that a little later in the program. Well, first we have something that most of us would not be affected by unless you are super rich. This is from the Gateway Pundit. Liberal mega donor Steven Spielberg reportedly fleeing California as Gavin Newsom's billionaire wealth tax looms. Again, the Gateway Pundit, February 22nd, 2026. For years, Hollywood elite Steven Spielberg has been one of the biggest cheerleaders for the radical left, dumping millions into Democrat coffers and supporting the very progressive policies that have turned California into a high-tax, crime-ridden wasteland. Reports are surfacing that Spielberg is officially ditching the Golden State, just as Governor Gavin Newsom and his Marxist allies in Sacramento push for a massive one-time 5% wealth tax on billionaires. For a man worth an estimated $7.1 billion, yes, that's with a B, not M, but B, billion. For a man worth an estimated $7.1 billion, that's a whopping $355 million. That's the size of the check he'd have to write to the state. According to multiple reports, Spielberg and his wife, actress Kate Capshaw, became official residents of New York City on January 1st, 2026, after leaving their longtime home base in California. The timing is raising serious questions, and for good reason. California's far left is currently pushing a controversial billionaire tax act that would slap a one-time 5% wealth tax on residents with a net worth exceeding $1 billion. The proposed measure could impact more than 200 billionaires living in the state and is being considered for the November 2026 ballot. Spielberg's spokesperson told the LA Times that the move was, quote, long planned, unquote, and solely about being closer to grandchildren. That also is in quotes, closer to grandchildren in New York. Now, Fox News reported, and this I presume is a direct quote, Steven Spielberg and his wife, Kate Capshaw, officially became New York City residents on January 1st, according to a report in the Los Angeles Times. The couple relocated to the San Remo co-op on Central Park West in Manhattan, which has previously housed celebrities, including Bono, Mick Jagger, Warren Beatty, and Tiger Woods. On the same day that Spielberg reportedly established residency, his production company, Amblin Entertainment, opened an office in New York City, marking a notable transition away from Hollywood. Speculation around the timing of the move can be linked to a proposed one-time 5% wealth tax on California residents worth $1 billion or more. While it has not yet qualified for the November ballot, the proposal, backed by the service, make that the Service Employees International Union, United Healthcare Workers West, would take effect in 2027, and taxpayers could spread payments over 5 years, with additional costs according to the Legislative Analyst's Office. Stevens' move to the East Coast is both long-planned and driven purely by his and Kate Capshaw's desire to be closer to their New York-based children and grandchildren, spokesperson Terry Press told the L.A. Times. Press also declined to comment on Spielberg's position regarding the wealth tax initiative. If the measure passes, determining who qualifies as a California resident could be complex. The state's Franchise Tax Board considers multiple factors when evaluating residency, including voter registration, time spent in California, driver's license issuance, vehicle registration, the location of a spouse and children, and social ties such as religious institutions or country clubs. All right, once again, that was in the Gateway Pundit's website on February 22nd. Well, as I mentioned a week or perhaps two ago, when you've got several billion dollars, it doesn't seem like you are giving up that much. Give up 5%. But then again, sometimes that $7.1 billion may be tied up. I'm sure that nobody has that much cash on hand. If you do, you better watch out. Certainly better not advertise it. But I suspect a lot of it is tied up in investments, stocks, bonds, and such, property, plant, and equipment, things of that nature that may not be easy to divest to get the cash to pay this. Well, not my worry. I certainly don't have that kind of money, and I don't think any of you do either. Well, now we'll move on to Fox News. As I record this, there's all kinds of talk about, are we going to war with Iran? Is there going to be a strike on Iran? Are negotiations going to succeed? What's going on? Now, in Fox News, on February 23rd, we had this story by Rebecca Grant. Ayatollah's arsenal versus American firepower. Iran's top four threats and how we fight back. President Donald Trump warns Iran against nuclear weapons as U.S. military assets surge into the Middle East. Benjamin Netanyahu issues a stark warning to Iran amid joint drills with Russia, intensifying regional tensions. Ayatollah Khamenei on X ramped up threats to send U.S. warships to the bottom of the sea. He said, quote, Americans constantly say that they are sending a warship toward Iran. Of course, a warship is a dangerous piece of military hardware. However, more dangerous than that warship is the weapon that can send that warship to the bottom of the sea, unquote. He or his minions tweeted February 17th. Admiral Brad Cooper is in charge of the United States Central Command, has forces to counter Iran and to carry out strikes if so ordered. Sadly, Iran has taken American lives over the years, and now the regime is desperate. With the airspace laid bare by attacks on integrated air defenses prior to Operation Midnight Hammer, Iran has little ability to defend itself against stealth aircraft. Count on Iran trying to hit U.S. ships and bases. Here are the four top tactics in the Ayatollah's arsenal and how the U.S. will fight back. First, ballistic missiles. Iran launched short and medium-range ballistic missiles against the United States Air Base at Al-Udeid, I guess it's pronounced, Al-Udeid, in Qatar on June 23, 2025. A skeleton crew of American soldiers with two Patriot missile batteries intercepted Iran's missiles. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane, in a Pentagon briefing the next day, said, quote, "We believe that this is the largest single Patriot engagement in the U.S. military's history," unquote. The U.S. Space Force will once again be on alert to detect the heat of Iranian missile launches and cue the target tracks. Iran's ballistic missiles can attack multiple targets, but U.S. forces are ready to intercept. And they get some technical information, but I'll skip that and get to the next possible thing that Iran can use, namely drones. Iran manufactures a lot of drones, but they are going to die if they tangle with U.S. forces. A Marine Corps fighter pilot flying an F-35C from the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln shot down one of Iran's Shahed drones on February 3rd. That was a Shahed 139 surveillance drone, which also carries glide bombs and can loiter for up to 24 hours. It got too close to the carrier, as Central Command put it. And they, once again, they give the credit to Marine Fighter Attack Squadron, VMFA 314. And the drone kill was easy work for the F-35C with a sensitive long-range radar and vectoring by Navy ED or E-2D radar planes, et cetera, et cetera. And it mentions that the U.S. Gerald R. Ford en route could add options for day and night combat air patrols against drones and missiles. If the attack is over land, look for the U.S. Air Force to pounce. Over the last 2 years, American pilots have become masters of anti-drone tactics. Kind of gives some background there, but I'm going to skip over that in the interest of time. The third thing Iran might try to use is swarming boats. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Navy, has a long history of harassment with small boats. And they like to boast about their exercises with, quote, swarms, unquote, of boats. That's over. Iran thug small boats can't form up to swarm under the constant eye and guns of this many U.S. ships and planes. Foolishly, two Iranian small boats and a drone tried to swarm a Swedish tanker carrying fuel to U.S. forces. How did that work out? Well, the U.S. Navy destroyer USS McFaul, that is MCFAUL, ran them off as Air Force land-based fighter planes zoomed in to assist. And the fourth and final thing that Iran might try to use is cruise missiles. Iran is stuffed with cruise missiles of various types. Their low snaking path makes them difficult targets. The good news is the U.S. Navy has done a lot of target practice on Houthi missiles, like when the destroyer Gravely, USS Gravely, destroyed the Sea Whiz Phalanx close-in weapon system against a sea-skimming Houthi missile 1 mile from the ship. I may have said destroyed. I should have said deployed the weapon system against a sea-skimming Houthi missile 1 mile from the ship on January 30th, 2024. So, yes, U.S. forces have the edge over the Ayatollah's arsenal, but make no mistake, this is a combat zone. Constant vigilance will be the key to survival. Navy sailors and the airmen, Marine soldiers and Space Force guardians will feel the pressure and intensity of 24/7 operations. All right, I'll cut it off there, but interesting. And let's hope they aren't becoming too confident to the point of being overconfident. Well, we'll see what develops. I'm recording this on Tuesday, February 25th. The first broadcast of the show is on Thursday evening on the 27th of February at 8 p.m. You can listen to it in various ways. You can tune in to WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, their website, WWCR.com, and hear it direct as they broadcast it on their internet channel. you know, to hear it in shortwave, if you happen to have a shortwave radio, at a frequency of 4.840 megahertz at 8 p.m. Eastern. And these are all Eastern time. And you can hear it at various other venues. You can go to our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, and look at the archives. Once the show is broadcast, you can hear the show there. You might even be able to get it before the show is broadcast on Thursday, possibly even Wednesday night. So there are various venues. There's also KStarTalkRadio.com and Kingdom Star Radio. So those are some of the ways that you can listen to the program. That, again, was Fox News, Ayatollah's Arsenal versus American Firepower, and that went up on their website, foxnews.com, February 23rd. Okay, and another thing from Iran that appeared in the Washington Times by Mike Glenn, the headline read, Witkoff says Iran a week away from having enough enriched uranium for a bomb. White House Special Envoy, and this was, by the way, Sunday, February 22nd. White House Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is warning that Iran is about a week away from having enough enriched uranium to create at least one nuclear bomb. Mr. Witkoff said Tehran has been enriching uranium at up to the 60% level, well beyond the capacity needed for civilian use, as the regime had claimed. The Islamic Republic has not enriched uranium at the 90% weapons-grade level, but has amassed a substantial stockpile of 60% enriched uranium, said Witkoff. That's about 90% of the work required to reach 90% purity, analysts say. And Mr. Witkoff said Saturday on Fox News Channel's My View, quote, that's really dangerous, so we can't have that, unquote. President Trump wants to know why Iranian leaders are continuing to dig in their heels over developing a nuclear arsenal despite the growing U.S. military presence in the region. Mr. Witkoff said, quote, with the amount of sea power and naval power that we have over there, why haven't they come to us and say, we don't want a weapon, so here's what we're prepared to do? It is hard to get them to that place, unquote. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said Saturday that Tehran would not bow to international pressure or internal dissent. Despite the obstacles, Mr. Pezeshkian said, Iran has the will and the ability to fight back. And next quote is from, also from the president. According to the government-run Iranian Students News Agency, he said, quote, in the event that it is subjected to military aggression, Iran will respond decisively and proportionally in the exercise of its inherent right of self-defense. We will strive for Iran to the very last drop of our blood, unquote. And, of course, the U.S. is engaged in one of the largest military buildups in the Middle East since the 2003 invasion of Iraq. That includes a massive surge in naval and air assets moving specifically toward the Persian Gulf region. The USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier arrived in late January with a full strike group, including multiple guided missile destroyers. The USS Gerald R. Ford reportedly passed through the Strait of Gibraltar last week. That aircraft carrier is now steaming through the Mediterranean and is expected to the region or in the region within 2 weeks, analysts said. And they give some descriptions of other kinds of warships. The U.S. military launched airstrikes in Iran's fortified nuclear facilities in June to destroy the regime's atomic infrastructure and slow its progress toward a nuclear weapon. The White House said the facilities were obliterated, but most experts estimated that the strike set back Iran's nuclear program 1 to 2 years by destroying specialized centrifuges and physical infrastructure. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said he believes Washington and Tehran can still find a diplomatic solution to the impasse. And let me skip down a bit. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said any viable deal with Iran must address its ballistic missile program along with its nuclear ambitions. But the Iranian chief diplomat said ballistic missiles are not part of the agenda. Mr. Arachi, I guess it's pronounced Arachi, said, quote, right now we are negotiating only nuclear, and there is no other subject, unquote. Mr. Rubio is reportedly meeting this week with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the U.S.-Iran nuclear talks, two Trump administration officials told the Associated Press. And let's see, the White House insists that Iran's entire nuclear enrichment program should be dismantled. The Iranian foreign minister said the subject is also a non-starter. He said, enrichment is our right. We are a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and we have every right to enjoy peaceful nuclear energy, including enrichment. He said, how we use this right is something related to us only. The enrichment is a sensitive part of our negotiations. Reza Pahlavi, the exiled son of Iran's last Shah, has emerged as an increasingly prominent figure in the wave of mass protests throughout Iran that began late last year and continued into early this year. Mr. Witkoff said he spoke with him at the urging of Mr. Trump. And the envoy said, quote, the president is interested in hearing everyone's views. He has no pride of authorship, which I greatly respect, because he's open to new ideas and new ways of thinking. And Iranian officials have blamed the U.S. and Israel for the recent wave of anti-government demonstrations around the country. All right, we shall see what happens. And by the time you hear this, perhaps this is going to be obsolete. I hope not. But only time will tell. And the headline does sound ominous. Iran a week away from having enough enriched uranium for a bomb. That by quote by Steve Witkoff, U.S. Special Envoy. And that appeared in the Washington Times on Sunday, February 22nd. Okay, going to switch gears a little bit. Again, if you'd like to write to me, it's Lou Caverly, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I have to admit that donations to the program have gone down lately, perhaps because it's after Christmas. Everybody's a little on the low side when it comes to money, but we do need your help to stay on the air. So if you enjoy the program, if you benefit from it, we would greatly appreciate any help you could send us to keep the program on the air. Now, LifeSite News. Let me hold off on that one to a little bit later in the program. Let's go with this one from WorldNet Daily. Texas fights back. No Sharia city in the Lone Star State. This is by Amanda Badalota, February 13th, 2026. In a clear stand for law sovereignty and the rule of American jurisdiction, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton announced a formal investigation into a potentially unlawful, quote, Sharia City, unquote, development in Kaufman County, warning that any attempt to establish a foreign-style enclave on Texas soil will not be tolerated. The February 9th press release from the Attorney General's office revealed that a U.S. subsidiary of the Dubai-based developer, SEE Holding, in partnership with Kaufman Solar, LLC, has purchased thousands of acres of land near Kaufman, Texas, prompting concerns among local residents and state leaders about the nature and intent of the proposed program or project. plan could accommodate as many as 20,000 foreign nationals, and some Texans fear that it would effectively create a community governed by principles dramatically at odds with local and state laws. Paxton has taken decisive legal action by issuing requests to examine, or RTEs, to C Holding and Kaufman Solar LLC. These demands seek critical documents and communications, including correspondence with local city, county, school, and state officials related to the development, agreements or relationships between the development entities, and detailed information about land acquisition and development plans. And the press release states, quote, "These legal requests are designed to determine whether this project is lawful and whether any statutes have been violated in the pursuit of a development that threatens the values and legal framework of Texas." The Attorney General left no room for ambiguity in the statement. He said, quote, "There will be no Sharia city in Texas under my watch," unquote. He added, "While you're on American soil, you will obey America's laws. I have launched the investigation to determine the nature of this development in Coffman County and will be thoroughly investigating this matter for any unlawful actions." The announcement aligns with an escalating trend among Texas leaders to reclaim local control and protect American communities from developments perceived as inconsistent with state and national legal norms. The investigation underscores a growing concern among residents and policymakers alike that foreign influence, especially in land developments that could exercise quasi-legal autonomy, must be scrutinized and, when necessary, halted to uphold sovereign law and constitutional order. Paxton's investigation has put a spotlight on Kaufman County, and the results of the probe are likely to have implications beyond one development, potentially shaping how states defend their borders and legal systems against proposals that challenge American legal supremacy. As WND, that's WorldNet Daily, has previously reported, a Muslim planned community called Epic City, about 40 miles northeast of Dallas, had its construction temporarily blocked by Governor Abbott. Attorney General Paxton and U.S. Senator John Cornyn on April 1st, 2025. Then on June 19th, Abbott signed a law, HB 4211, restricting radical Islamic Sharia law communities. And in October, Paxton announced the state's investigation into Epic City had turned up illegal activities and that Texas would file a lawsuit. That particular planned Muslim city, one of many such communities being planned in America, would include 1,000 single and multifamily dwellings, a K-12 school, a community college, a sports facility, and a shopping center. The already existing mosque there, the East Plano Islamic Center, Epic, if you take the initials, is intended to be the nucleus of Epic City. Its construction is currently on hold due to Abbott, Paxton, and Cornyn's investigation. And that again appeared in WorldNet Daily. Texas fights back. No Sharia city in the Lone Star State. That was by Amanda Badalotter, I guess you'd say. February 13th, 2026. Well, what else do we have here? We have a couple of things from LifeSite News. And LifeSite News is a Canadian publication, so they tend to have some things from Canada. But what occurs in Canada could very well drift down into the USA, so it's good to know what's going on in our neighbor to the north. Here's the title. Liberals bring back bill that could criminalize quoting the Bible on homosexuality, despite massive pushback. And the subtitle reads, Conservatives slated Liberals' amendment to Bill C-9 that says it would not apply to religious activity if it does not willfully promote hatred, which could lead to prosecuting Christians. This is by Jonathan Van Maren, Lakeside News, Monday, February 23rd, 2026. Bill C-9, the Carney government's hate speech bill that would remove protection for religious speech, was back on the agenda for today's Justice Committee meeting. Again, I remind everyone, this is in Canada, so if some of the committees don't sound familiar, that's why. Conservative MP Andrew Lawton, one of the bill's most prominent critics, tabled a petition signed by thousands of Canadians opposing it earlier this month. Bill C-9 is back on the agenda for tomorrow's Justice Committee meeting. He says, I have heard from thousands of Canadians concerned about how this bill infringes on freedom of expression and religious freedom. I was proud to table a petition on their behalf earlier this month. That was a tweet he put out. And if we skip down just a little to get to the main points, Lawton was referring to comments. I guess I'll have to read this part to have it make sense. Quote, the petitioners are very concerned by this infringement on religious liberty, which were aggravated, of course, by comments from the Minister for Canadian Identity and Culture, arguing that there should be prosecution for citing certain religious texts. Lawton continued, so petitioners are calling on the government to withdraw Bill C-9 and focus on upholding freedom of expression and freedom of religion, unquote. Lawton was referring to comments made by Liberal Minister Mark Miller, who last October said that good faith defenses of, quote, hate speech, unquote, were indefensible under Canadian law during discussion at the Justice Committee. It was revealing that his go-to example was a passage from Scripture. And this is Miller's words. In Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Romans, and around other passages, there's a clear hatred toward, for example, homosexuals. Miller claimed. He went on to say, I don't understand how the concept of good faith can be invoked if someone were literally invoking a passage from, in this case, the Bible. There are other religious texts that say the same thing, and somehow say that this is good faith, unquote. And clearly, there are situations in these texts where these statements are hateful, Miller added. They should not be used to invoke, be a defense, and there should perhaps be discretion for prosecutors to press charges. I just want to understand what your notion of good faith is in this context, where there are clearly passages in religious texts that are definitely hateful, unquote. Miller has denied that he wishes to prohibit certain religious texts, but the government's track record makes it clear that the Liberals cannot be trusted on this file. All right, that gives you the key ideas there. And let me see now. That was in Lakeside News by Jonathan Van Maren, Monday, February 23rd, 2026. Well, let's see what else we have here. This is also from Lakeside News, largely using information from Fox News. The title says, Fox News host says transgender people should not be able to own guns in the wake of a deadly shooting. This is by Doug Mainwaring, Lakeside News, Saturday, February 21st. In a discussion about a transgender father's horrific shooting of his ex-wife and children at a high school hockey game, a Fox News host asserted that people who believe they're the opposite sex should be banned from gun ownership. During a segment of Fox News' popular talk show, The Five, Fox and Friends host Lawrence Jones indicated that while leftists have long wanted gun ownership rights taken away from all Americans. They seem to have a completely different view when it comes to adults who are seriously gender confused. Excuse me. Jones said, quote, for a movement that is always quick to talk about gun restrictions, they have not been able to address this issue with moral clarity, unquote. And he declared, because of the politics surrounding the issue of not wanting to be offensive, we're not doing the right thing on this. If you, from a psychological standpoint, think that you are another sex, you should not have a gun, said Jones. Jones said unequivocally that a diagnosis of gender dysphoria is a problem, and pointed out that anyone seeking gun ownership must fill out a federal form which explicitly asks the applicant if he or she has a history of mental illness. Jones said he is a purist when it comes to the issue of gun ownership. I'm from Texas. We have constitutional carry. Everybody has a gun there. But if you mentally think you're someone that you're not, that has to be addressed, he added. The discussion followed news earlier in the day that the Rhode Island shooter was a 56-year-old father of six, Robert Dorgan, who went by the name Roberto Esposito after having undergone so-called gender reassignment surgery in 2020. Dorgan's wife filed for divorce in 2020 on grounds of, quote, gender reassignment surgery, narcissistic, and personality disorder traits, unquote, according to WPRI. I believe that's in Providence, Rhode Island. As far back as 2019, Dorgan admitted on X, then Twitter, that his wife was unhappy about his decision to identify as female, writing, trans woman, six kids, wife not thrilled, unquote. Dorgan's murderous spree followed closely on the heels of an eerily similar family religious shooting in Tumwater Ridge, Canada. Another transgender-identifying young male tried to kill as many members of his family as he could before turning his gun on himself. By the time it was over, he had killed a total of 9 and wounded another 25, some of whom remain in critical condition. The Fox News host is not alone in his belief that transgender-identifying people should be denied gun ownership. Matt Walsh took to social media following the Rhode Island incident to say none of them should be allowed to own guns. Any adult man with a wife and children who transitions to a woman is automatically a threat to his family and the public. All of them should be looked at with suspicion and extreme wariness, said Walsh on X shortly after the shooting. None of them should be allowed to own guns, said the Daily Wire host. They should all be legally required to undergo psychiatric treatment at the very least. Any man who is willing to destroy his family and bring unimaginable harm and devastation to his wife and children for the sake of a sexual fetish is by definition dangerous, delusional, and narcissistic to an extreme and unstable degree. All right. Going to jump down a little bit. And we mentioned Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and the place in Canada. And adding to the list, Annunciation Catholic Church shooter was identified as trans. Nashville Christian shooter identified as trans. Lakewood Church shooter identified as trans. Colorado Springs shooter identified as non-binary. Denver shooter identified as trans. Aberdeen shooter identified as trans. Iowa high school shooter identified as trans. In fact, a trans activist. Charlie Kirk's assassin, Tyler Robinson, had a furry obsession and lived with a transgender boyfriend. Trump's attempted assassin, Thomas Crooks, used they-them pronouns, had a deep interest in furries, and was exploring gender identity. And we can add to the list. Well, I think that repeats itself, so I'll stop there on that one. And what else do we have? Thanks to my loyal friends up in Massachusetts. We get a few headlines from New York and Boston areas. Let's see what we have here. Congress now the road to riches. This was in the Boston, Massachusetts Herald on February 12th. And the subtitle says, Massachusetts Dems join Pelosi's school of get rich quick in office. This is by Joe Battenfeld. A growing number of Democratic lawmakers, including several in Massachusetts, are following the Nancy Pelosi school of get-rich-quick schemes, a surefire way of seeing your family wealth skyrocket while serving in Congress. Ayanna Pressley, Elizabeth Warren, Catherine Clark, Ilhan Omar have all become richer, some astonishingly so, after stepping in the cash-lined halls of the Capitol, whether it's from their husbands' businesses, their stock portfolios, or their book deals. Violet Squad member Presley's rise from nearly zero to up to $8 million in net worth, patented by her and her husband's four rental properties in Manhattan, in Mattapan, Boston, Fort Lauderdale, and Martha's Vineyard, is drawing increasing scrutiny as she bristles at questions about her newly acquired wealth. Presley and hubby Conan Harris sold the $500,000 Florida pad for a $67,000 profit in 2024. And a heated Presley, surrounded by a team of security in black SUVs, said in Washington when confronted by a reporter recently, quote, I wish you people would stop reporting fake news. You don't know anything about me and my life. I was raised in a single-parent home. Every single thing my family and I have, we have earned. And you are reporting fake news. Do your homework. Presley, who makes $174,000 a year, and like Warren, has railed against tax breaks for the wealthy, also told Fox News, quote, there's nothing to see here about her financial rise. Okay, going to stop there for that one. There's more to it. That appeared in the Boston Herald on February 12th. What else do we have here? A little bit more about the trans shooter entitled Gender Conceal. This, I think, was the New York Post by Bethany Mandel. In the subtitle, Media Bury the Truth on Another Trans Shooter. Another mass shooting and another devastated community. Once again, ethics. Now, make that. I have to read the small print here. And once again, elites in the media class and public officials are so terrified of offending that they don't dare ask the obvious question, why is so many of the most horrifying attacks carried out by people identified as trans? Just give that little headline there, because we already pretty well covered that. And there are a couple of other things. The school massacre, this is about the Canadian one. This, I believe, was in the New York Post. Yes, Thursday, February 12th. And a couple of headlines. Kill six in Canada after slaying Kent. Well, we already talked pretty much about that. That was carried out by a character named Van Lensolier, former student who dropped out approximately 4 years ago. And how he gained access to the building during school hours was not known. It's sad, but almost all schools now, you have to page the school, push a button or something to alert the school office. And if they don't know you, they may not let you in, unless you have good reason. And a 12-year-old girl battles for life at that same attack in Tumbler Ridge, Canada. That was a secondary school, British Columbia. A little girl, 12 years old, was hanging on for life at the time of this publication, February 12th. And that, again, was from the New York Post, February 12th. All right, let's see if we have a little different topic. Democrats hate voter ID laws. You've been keeping up? The so-called, I think it's called the SAVE Act, passed the U.S. House of Representatives, but now it appears to be stuck in the Senate. They've got to get 60 votes to get it approved by the Senate so it can go to President Trump's. And it says Democrats are promising to kill a bill requiring voters nationwide to show an ID at the polls, part of a long campaign to keep the election laws loose and make it easier for Dems to cast ballots. So why are they so worried about what seems like a common sense measure to prevent voter fraud? The bill narrowly passed by the House, and not before the U.S. Senate would crack down on illegal voting in 14 states, including Massachusetts. And those are the states that do not force voters to show a photo ID. It would also require proof of citizenship to register to vote. The proposed law change could have wide-ranging ramifications for the midterm and presidential elections, which are ripe for fraud. Democrats claim the bill is too stringent and would discourage legal citizens from voting, and even prevent married women who change their names from casting ballots. These scare tactics are likely to work in the Senate, where supporters of the bill, called the SAVE Act, or SAVE America Act to be more exact, need 60 votes to send it to President Donald Trump. That's a threshold Republicans can't meet, and Democrats have in fact called the bill dead on arrival. Massachusetts is especially susceptible to fraud because the state has handed out tens of thousands of driver's licenses to illegal immigrants, giving them a handy photo ID. In some cases, Bay State voters may be asked for identification, which could be a driver's license or simply a recent utility bill or letter from a school housing office. Even if they don't produce one of these documents, voters can still cast a provisional ballot, giving them time to find an acceptable form of ID. Some states are even more lenient, requiring voters to simply swear they are citizens or sign a poll book to cast a ballot. All right, well, I'd like to see that bill passed. I was surprised in Maryland. Seems to me when I voted the last time, they didn't require any ID. I could have just given my name or the name of anybody I knew who was a voter on the voters' rolls. And I guess that they would have let me in. And I could have voted. And then the person who would be the rightful person to vote would have probably been deprived of that right. Because the Democrats say, oh, nobody ever does that. That's laughable. Well, okay, that was, by the way, now let's see. I believe that was the Boston Herald. I don't have a date on that one. All right. Oh, how about AOC? AOC's Munich bomb. This was the New York Post, February 17th. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did a star turn at the Munich Security Conference, and her appearance went about as well as you'd expect a celebrity congresswoman who has spent about 5 minutes thinking about foreign policy. AOC is to strategic thinkers what Gayle King is to astronauts. She projects all the authority of an international relations 101 student who didn't realize that there was going to be a pop quiz before the spring break. She sounds as if she watched the 2024 Kamala Harris campaign and concluded that what sank the vice president was just that the candidate's policy answers were much too substantive and precise. There is no way to judge, or there is no way, judging by her performance in Germany, that AOC is going to let herself make the same mistake. Ocasio-Cortez critiqued Secretary of State Marco Rubio's remarkable speech at the conference for being a, quote, pure appeal to Western culture, unquote, which she rendered with air quotes as though its existence is somehow in doubt. It is certainly true, as she said, that cultures change over time. But this doesn't alter the reality of Western distinctiveness, as it has developed over a couple of millennia. AOC seemed to consider it a provocation that Rubio had talked about Western culture when discussing a Western alliance, NATO, founded to defend Western countries from a totalitarian menace emanating from a Eurasian behemoth. In fact, the Secretary's speech was well received and persuasively set out the common history and roots of Europe and the United States. The AOC rejoinder was that what she called alleged Western values are illusory because they haven't always defined our interactions with, quote, the global South, unquote. And let's see. I'll jump down a little bit. Asked whether the United States should defend Taiwan in the event of a Chinese attack, AOC hesitated and stumbled, as though the question had never occurred to her before not answering. She objected to our operation against Nicolas Maduro. According to AOC, we undertook it, quote, just because the nation is below the equator, unquote. Yet Venezuela is north of the equator. And so on and so forth. Well, some other good things there. Again, that was from the New York Post. AOC's Munich bomb, February 17th. Then we have, what do we have? Let's see. Icy reaction. This is in the Boston Herald, February 18th. Massachusetts Republicans blast Healey's call to defund ICE. And this was the renowned governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Maury Healey. This was written by Tim Dunn. And Massachusetts Republicans are denouncing Governor Maura Healey's call to defund ICE, as the governor has ramped up her criticism of the federal agency since launching her re-election campaign bid in January. And she appeared on TV. Let's see what else. She said, quote, right now ICE has too much power, unbridled authority, no guardrails, and is not acting like a law enforcement agency, she said. And that's why I say it's really not a law enforcement agency at this point. Let me see, anything else worth reading here? It's a good article, but we're down to about the last 5 or 6 minutes, so we'll have to scoop around a little bit. All right, well, she's one of these leftist governors that has been saying, get the illegal immigrants everything possible, and putting them up in hotels and motels all over the place at taxpayer expense, of course. Well, I don't live in Massachusetts anymore, haven't for half a century, so I'll have to leave it to the citizens of my former home to see if they're going to keep this leftist as their governor. Anything else we have here? Oh, we have another one about AOC's geo-gaffe in Europe, but we already talked about that. Little thing from the New York Post. Let's see now. So I get a couple more things about the various shooters, and in particular, the one in Pawtucket. Just to give a little background there, he killed his ex-wife, an adult son, and I guess he was going by the name Rhonda Dorgan. He was pronounced dead at the scene, apparently killed himself, and his name given at birth was Robert Dorgan. Again, a transgender person. Definitely targeted the victims. He had legally purchased the two guns he brought to the skating rink, 10mm Glock, and a SIG 226. And let's see now. so many unknowns about the case? This was in the Boston Herald, entitled Utter Senselessness. Boston Herald, February 18th. If you want more information on that. Here's another one. Killings demand look at mental health. This was by Carol Markowitz in the New York Post. And the date was February 18th. Let's read a paragraph or two. And what is becoming a regular occurrence, someone trans-identifying is accused of committing a mass murder, this time during a high school hockey game in suburban Rhode Island. Robert Dorgan, who preferred to be called Roberta, killed his ex-wife and one of his own children and shot three more people before turning the gun on himself. In 2020, Dorgan told people that he was being kicked out of his home by his father-in-law after Dorgan had undergone gender reassignments, make that reassignment surgery. And most of this we had already read. One of the subheadlines says, the left still blames the guns, not the shooter. Typical. Typical. And let's see now. Here's one called Implausible from the New York Post, also February 18th. Again, about Ilhan Omar, that she needs to be investigated for filing misleading disclosures to Congress regarding her husband's $30 million net worth, according to a government watchdog. Well, we'll see how that happens. I will believe it when I see it. They're going to crack down on her. They seem to never crack down on their own in the Congress. But we'll see. Well, our music is coming on. If you want to write to me, write to Luke Haverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. I want to thank you all for listening. Check out our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Have a great week. Talk to you next week. Good night.